Before a producer hits record or before a journalist picks up a pen, someone like you notices something and wants to understand it. Every day, we invite you to keep asking questions like why and who and how. Because NPR begins with questions, not conclusions. And your right to curiosity is a right worth protecting.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Thursday, July 16th. We'll tell you why there's concern over two recently proposed SDG&E projects. More on that next, but first, the headlines. A little more than $4 million in grants will be used to provide teens and young adults with job training, paid work experience, and career opportunities. The San Diego Workforce Partnership announced the news on Monday. The funds come from the U.S. Department of Labor to support kids facing education or employment barriers. The grants are focused on areas where there are fewer work opportunities for youth. That includes South San Diego County, where 31% of teens and young adults are unemployed. Interested youth can email youth@workforce.org for more info. The Port of San Diego is asking for feedback on a proposal to redevelop East Harbor Island. That's the area across the street from the San Diego Airport. The redevelopment would add a waterfront park with a playground and an art walk, and an entertainment district that would include a Topgolf driving range. You can now comment on the project's environmental impact report. The report can be found at portofsandiego.org. North Park's first sports bar tailored to women's sports opens today. CBS 8 says the space was built for sports fans who have felt like an afterthought, which is where co-owners say the name One of Us comes from. One of Us is co-owned by a group of women who CBS 8 says held pop-up events around local teams like your San Diego Wave to build buzz and community around their business. The owners of the space, of course, say all are welcome at One of Us. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Walter Anderson Nursery, family-owned and operated since 1928, providing San Diego with gardening expertise and independent service for four generations. For more information, visit walteranderson.com.
Separate unanimous resolutions passed this week expressing serious concern about two proposed SDG&E projects. Public Matters reporter Kevin Trevelin has more.
During a meeting Tuesday, Temecula Mayor Jessica Alexander and the City Council were unequivocal in their opposition to SDG&E's proposal to build a high-voltage power line through the community.
We all are going to save Temecula. We are a force to be reckoned with, and they do not want to come into our city. So with that...
The public has shown up in force to speak against the Golden Pacific Power Link. The 145-mile line would snake from the Imperial Valley through Temecula to a proposed substation near the San Diego-Orange County border. But city leaders say it would run through an extremely fire-prone area. There have been similar worries about SDG&E's plan for a smaller transmission line proposed for East San Diego County.
We are feeling every day the impact of the level of wildfire risk.
Ron Nearing chairs an advisory county planning group that meets in Harbison Canyon, an area devastated by the Cedar Fire in 2003.
We at the planning group insist, to the extent that we have a voice, that any major projects that take place in our community have to result in reducing the risk, not just holding the line on the risk.
SDG&E says both the Suncrest Loop and Golden Pacific Power Link are needed to support grid reliability and future demand. The California Public Utilities Commission has ultimate say over the projects. Both still have a number of regulatory hurdles to clear. Kevin Trevelin, KPBS News.
San Diego County yesterday launched the first of four public meetings on the future of San Pasqual Academy. It's a residential program for foster youth in Escondido. North County reporter Alexander Wen says this is the second time the county has turned to the community for feedback.
San Pasqual Academy opened in 2021 to provide housing, a high school, and mental health services to foster youths. Recent changes in federal and state laws have led to a decline in enrollment. Current legislation favors placing children with families over congregate group homes. Community advocate Shane Harris is a former foster youth at San Pasqual. He says discussions about the Academy's future need voices from foster youths, the population most affected.
If we're going to be trauma-informed, we need to start off these sessions by acknowledging that population, because these are the people who have lived it, who have been through it, and who really know what the successes have been and what they haven't been.
The next community forum is this Friday at North Inland Livewell Center. The county is also hosting two other virtual sessions next week. Alexander Nguyen, KPBS News.
A new state plan focuses on reducing human-caused wildfires. Environment reporter Tammy Merger says efforts in San Diego County are being praised as a prevention model.
The new state plan envisions a future where fires in Southern California are limited to natural ignitions. The plan praises what Caltrans is doing along Interstate 8. It's known as a wildfire hotspot. Jeff Hayes is part of the state task force that drafted the plan.
Caltrans has really been doing an excellent job of mowing along Interstate 8. And that mowing has reduced the ignitions substantially along Interstate 8.
He says Caltrans is working on a long-term solution to reduce human-caused ignitions.
Replacing invasive ignitable grasses, primarily grasses, with less ignitable native plants, where it makes sense to have plants.
He says the goal is to replicate this work on all Southern California roads. The state plan also proposes thinning overly dense forests and restoring severely burned areas. The public can comment on the plan through August. Tammy Merga, KPBS News.
A trailblazing San Diego Navy admiral is reportedly the latest military officer to have their promotion held up by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. Military reporter Andrew Dyer says the latest target of Hegseth might be one of the most well-known San Diego women in uniform today.
In 2021, Rear Admiral Amy Bauernschmidt made history, becoming the first woman to command a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the USS Abraham Lincoln in San Diego. Now, the New York Times reports she was one of seven one-star admirals to have their promotions to two-star canceled by Secretary Hegseth. She was second in command on the Lincoln in 2018 when she spoke to her hometown Fox 6 News Milwaukee station.
Very few times in my life have I actually sat there and thought about the fact that I was a woman doing this, because for the most part, I was just treated as a naval officer and an aviator.
Hegseth has reportedly intervened in promotions or straight up fired more than 60 senior military officers. The Times says more than half of them were women or black people. He explained his decision-making in a speech to military brass in September.
It's nearly impossible to change a culture with the same people who helped create or even benefited from that culture. An entire generation of generals and admirals were told that they must parrot the insane fallacy that, quote, our diversity is our strength.
Acting Pentagon Press Secretary Joe Valdez tells KPBS the New York Times, quote, hallucinates racism and sexism where none exists. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
Pride Week celebrations are underway as San Diego gears up for the annual Pride Parade and Festival this weekend, which continues to be among the largest Pride festivals in the country. Midday Edition host Jade Heineman spoke with Keisha Lynn Elliott, the new executive director of San Diego Pride.
Now, this year's theme is Pride Shines On. So what does that theme mean to you, and how does it sit in the moment?
It sits in the moment as exactly what we need. You know, the theme was the very first thing that was presented to me as a decision to make on the job. And when I saw the logo and I heard the theme, I said yes, because we've been living through some dark times. That's not unfamiliar to the LGBTQ community. It's not unfamiliar to me. But what is that the only answer to the darkness is the light. So Pride Shining On means shining a light on all of our resilience, our versatility, our beauty, our joy, but also shining the light on the fight, the push for equality, not hiding and allowing ourselves to be made small or kept silent, but really, really pushing on and leading the way for the future generations to come behind us.
And so how is that theme going to show up this weekend at the festival and parade?
I think I'm excited to see how the different community partners and sponsors and people that are participating in the parade really embody the theme. But also, you know, we really are just trying to make sure that everybody feels seen and belonging in this pride. And so what it means to shine is shine in your LGBTQ identity, if that's you, shine in your allyship, shine in your support, and stand in this moment in the light. Like we said, there's been enough darkness for this week, this weekend. Can we be bright together?
You know, earlier you mentioned that the organization had seen a lot of change. There was a lot of turnover in leadership before you came in. There were also concerns from some local LGBTQ plus leaders over transparency and poor mm-hmm. community engagement in the months leading up to last year's festival. You're about 6 months into this job. What changes have you made since stepping in?
Well, my first priority has been stabilization. So not to tip my hat too much, but I think the fact that I'm still staying the course and showing up and being in community, listening and showing that we're doing the work, and there is a lot of work to do. I have been personally focused on rebuilding trust across the community, strengthening our internal operation, and increasing that transparency, being open, listening to people, alongside the work of preparing not only for this year's Pride Festival and Parade, but preparing Pride to survive and endure for its next 50 years.
And Pride is also facing a loss of funding and an increase in anti-LGBTQ plus policy and rhetoric. That's coming from the federal level. How are you navigating those challenges?
I am navigating those challenges by really making it clear that this weekend's festival and parade are a fundraiser. And it's not just a fundraiser to make sure that we can make the parade and festival happen, although that is a part of it. It is to make sure that Pride can make its mission happen. And our mission is year-round. Our community advocacy, our community education programming, and our community philanthropy. So I've been coming to the community, letting them know, thank you for coming to Pride because you are one of our biggest donor bases. And if you want this organization to continue to do its work, we need you to continue showing up for us and with us, with your time and with your money throughout the year. That is what is going to help. And I think that that's a different message that I'm bringing from in the past. It's just focus on come to the celebration. But there's work to do after the celebration is done. And I think the community needs to understand that the organization needs them to be involved in order to continue to deliver on the fullness of our mission.
That was San Diego Pride Executive Director Keisha Lynn Elliott speaking with Midday Edition host Jade Hindman. That's it for the podcast today. Today's podcast was edited by Brooke Ruth and hosted and produced by me, Lawrence K. Jackson. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
KPBS On Demand is supported by ACLU of San Diego and Imperial Counties. The work of the ACLU is about closing the gap between the America that was promised and the America that is. Learn more at www.aclu-sdic.org.